Hello, this is John Galloway.
And this is Jesse Liberty.
And this is the Full Stack Videocast, a pair programming experiment where we build out a full working application spanning from server to web and phone and everything else in between while you watch.
Okay, I think what will help, John, is if we provide a little bit more context for the application that we're now thinking of building as part of this Full Stack project. And so you and I had a budding idea of an application that would touch everything from a back-end server all the way through Silverlight and down to the phone. And the genesis of that idea is that we each go to Redmond a few times a year to meet with the team. And when we do that, I don't know what your experience is, but my experience is that when I get to Redmond, there are often meetings, and often those meetings are with folks who I have met before, and inevitably, sooner or later, I'm going to run into somebody who I certainly should know their name, and I wish I did know their name, but I have forgotten their name.
And that's right. And you know, as we talked about it too, like conferences, this happens all the time, or, I mean, everyone, I think a lot of people struggle with, you know, I should know this person's name, and I remember these things about them. You know, I remember that I met them at this conference, or I know that they work with so-and-so, but I just can't seem to place, I can't remember their name.
It right, and inevitably for me, fortunately, you know, my boss the next day will call me up and remind me of the name. So we were thinking that we would build an application that would allow you to explore faces and try to memorize those names. So the idea was to, first of all, take advantage of the fact that the Windows phone has a 5-megapixel camera on it. Mm-hmm. And also, I was envisioning that there'd be a web piece to this, perhaps for filling in information, perhaps for creating some sort of game or drill for memorizing those faces, and yeah, that we would have a strong back end for managing all of that data.
That's right, yeah.
And then while we were at it, we said that we would build this as a Glasshouse application so that folks can watch, and that leads us to the videos that we're looking at now.
Right, right. So while we've been playing with products when we were working on the server last time, really the plan is that we're going to switch over to working with people.
That's right. And as part of that, since we're going to build that big project, we certainly want to take a look at test-driven development, and we want to capture as much as we can of best practices on all of the platforms. That I have to ask
how the best practices is, they're getting gold medals because they followed
correct,
best practices.
Because they followed best practices.
Okay.
Yeah. What could, so be, what could have, be better for best practices?
And then we have that to look forward to, that we may also achieve a gold medal in the Sydney Olympics.
And that leads me to this image.
So as we were saying, we ended last time on the server looking at products, and that's fine, but we need to switch that over to working with a person. We're going to have a person model, and so the naive way to do that, which I often default to, is to rename, do these just global replaces, right? So yep, we'll rename from product to person. And I will replace all and then back out the ones where it doesn't make sense. What are the odds that I'm going to break something?
I'd say it's a one in one.
Right?
Asymptotically approaching one.
Right. And so that's funny. Assembly product instead of assembly person. Yeah, there's a very good chance of that. And so that's going to lead into the other, you know, case here of we really want to be able to test big changes for two reasons. One, we don't want to break things, and two, we want to work without fear. We want to be able to make big changes and feel confident about them.
So, that's a good reason for unit tests, and then the question is, do we do unit tests or do we do test-driven? And I think there's a lot of confusion still in the community about the difference. And
yes,
so as we go, we should talk a little bit about that difference, because test-driven development uses unit tests, but the difference is that you start with a very simple test that you know is going to fail, then you write enough code to make that pass,
mm-hmm.
test that it does pass, and repeat. And so the unit tests tend to be very small, very fast, very discrete. They have a binary answer. Yes, they passed or no, they didn't. They test one thing and only one thing. And you have a lot of them. So a lot of features there in test-driven development. And the design emerges out of that process rather than starting with a design that you then test. Or even
exactly.
more
yeah.
traditionally, so, you start with a design, then code, and then test.
Right. So, for example, you know, we've got these tests that are included in this default project that we created. And we could go through and we could extract tests from our existing controller. And that would, you know, that shows some, that creates some level of testing. So it's definitely better than nothing. But as you're saying, the act of writing a test that fails and letting that, and then fixing it and letting that drive our design does a lot more than just give us this test suite. It actually drives the design in a way that we end up with the design emerges.
I think your point is well taken, which is that the design emerges, and it's not necessarily the design you would have set out with. And most important, you end up designing only as much as you need, and you end up implementing only as much as you need, rather than designing for supposed needs that may or may not ever come to fruition and mm-hmm. may just as equally likely end up being rat holes, sinkholes that you have to deal yeah. with later.
Yep.
So in theory, test-driven design makes a whole lot of sense. Then you come to that point, which I think we're about to hit any minute, where, okay, let's write our first test, and, oh my goodness, how do I write the first test if I don't even have any code?
Right. And so we also talked about, you know, there's a lot of different frameworks that you can use to do test-driven development. So the one that comes with Visual Studio, we've got the Visual Studio unit testing. I forget the exact product name, but a lot of people call it MS Test. But so you've got this simple thing where you've got test classes, you've got test methods. There's also a lot of other frameworks out there. There's things like XUnit, which is a little bit more, it removes the setup teardowns. It also has kind of the syntax is a little bit more behavior driven. And then you can take that further all the way to these other frameworks that are completely behavior driven. So you're specifying your tests not in, you know, testing methods. This is very much code here that we've got. Behavior driven frameworks are a lot more, they're supposed to be things that work in terms of business objects. So a business, you know, your business user could look at them and could read your tests.
And I'm very intrigued. I think we're agreed that we're going to start simple. I'm very intrigued. If you could bring up quickly in your browser, mm-hmm. there was a
Story Queue,
the BDD environment. And this is a whole other kind of testing. And
right.
if you look here where you have given this following plain text story, and then taking those assumptions, I want this, given that I have this, it should do this, and so on, and then bring it down here into code, where you're actually creating your code and your test method out of that scenario. I mean, that yeah. is definitely something I'm hoping we will have an opportunity to return to.
Right. So the idea is we want to keep our options open here to change around our testing as we go, but we definitely want to start from the beginning with some tests and to avoid, you know, taking a long time to get started. What we've decided we're going to do is we're going to use Visual Studio unit testing, but we're going to use this should library, and
yes.
should originated with the XUnit project, but it's been extracted out and it's available for use by pretty much any unit testing framework. And instead of, when we're looking at our tests here, they read like code. So when we're writing or reading these tests, we have to think like a compiler. We have to say, okay, you know, here's this, assert this, and it works, but you have to do that kind of mental conversion, which is not which is not a good thing when you're writing tests, because your tests really should be more logical than kind of code focused. So,
and there should be virtually zero time between thinking about what you want to accomplish and writing a test to test whether it does.
Exactly. Yep. So here we've got these. These are examples of should assertions. We'll play with these in a bit, but it's nice to be able to just say should equal, should not be null, should contain something. So there's a lot of these neat extensions, extension methods. Another neat thing here is these fluent assertions, so we can test multiple things at a time. So kind of neat. All right. So so what we're going to do here is we're going to two things. First, we'll want to bring in this should library. So I can say I can use my package manager, which is part of the NuGet project, formerly known as NuPack. Now it's NuGet. If you forget the commands, I have been using this lately. So you can say get command, and that'll list out, you know, these are your commands that are available. So now if we want to add in this package...
And you're doing this on purpose, or we're going to make a mistake and fix it?
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
So I'll say nap, which is short for add package, should. And I add the should package. Now I've made a little bit of a mistake here. I added that to my demo project instead of my test project. So no problem. I can remove that. I can just say... I could either say remove package or NRP should, and I'll change this over to my test project. So I'm a big fan of doing whatever you can to so that you work without fear, so that you're not afraid of making a catastrophic error. And just like unit testing, I like this package manager because it makes it very easy to add and remove projects without worry that I'm going to trash my project in some bad way.
Which is a great segue into the fact that we want to come back to the idea both of version control and the specific decisions we've made about version control to be able to code without fear.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. So now we've got our should library in place, and we can create a new test class. So in a repository, we're going to be creating methods such as, you know, get person.
I want to interrupt you for a moment.
Yeah.
Is the repository something that will exist beyond the tests, or does it exist only for the tests?
Repository exists beyond the tests. So it's in a very high-level way, you can think of it almost kind of as a data access layer.
Okay. So in addition to creating a repository, we're also going to want to create a mock or a fake within our test so that we're not dependent on the repository being present and wired up.
Exactly. Yep. So we're going to, so our general flow that we're going to want to do is we're going to write tests. We're going to test them against a a fake repository. And then once that's in place, we can switch it over and we can test that against our real repository.
And we'll accomplish that using dependency injection.
That's right. So the benefit of doing, there's two benefits of doing that. One is that we're going to let our tests drive our design. And two is that we'll have a fake person repository. Okay. So I just renamed this from product to person.
Excellent.
So the idea is we're going to have two benefits from using this approach. One is that we're going to have tests drive the design of our repository without getting into the, we're not going to have to think about our data and what's going on. We're going to be working at the code level. Two is that we're going to have a fake repository available for testing. And that's important because when you're writing unit tests, they really shouldn't be going against a database. They should be all focused at the code level. And if you're testing your database, you're really doing an integration test. And so we want to test at the code level for our unit tests.
Right, but it's not just a matter of conviction that, well, we don't want to do unit tests. It's also that it may not be available to us. We want to be
right.
able to decouple that and test independently.
Yep. And so as we're doing this, just, you know, in terms of explaining these different things, there's this Martin Fowler article on it's called mocks aren't stubs. And so we're specifically creating a fake object. So it has a working implementation, but takes a shortcut that makes it not suitable for production. So in this case, we're going to use an in-memory database. So that's why this is a fake as opposed to a mock or a stub or a dummy, et cetera.
So, for people who care about that kind of thing, that's the kind of thing that people like that care about.
Exactly. Just to get our stub or our should business going, let's take a look here and let's just paste in some of these should things. So if we drop these are should assertions, and we'll just see how these look. So we'll go here. And we'll need to bring in a reference to our should library. So we'll say using should and using should.fluent. All right.
Now, did you already add the reference?
I did because the package manager added them for us.
Excellent.
Okay. So now I can run all the... I want to run all the tests that are in this current context, and I can do that by saying run all tests in current context, which is control RT. So these all pass. So now let's start writing some... Let's get rid of this and start writing some actual tests.
John, if you don't mind, I'm going to stop you right here because this is the place, I think, where folks who are coming to test-driven development come to a screeching halt, which is we're ready to write a test. We don't have any code to write it against. Mm-hmm. And so what do I do? And so I think what you do is you say, well, first of all, what are we testing? We're testing the repository. And the idea of these tests is that they should be very small and very discrete. We're not testing the entire repository. We're testing one piece of functionality from the repository. So the question I think you have to ask yourself is, what is one...
The way you're phrasing it, it's just you have to say, do you feel lucky?
Yes, exactly right. A Clint Eastwood moment. I think you want to pose the question of, what's one essential truth about the repository? What's one thing we know this repository must be able to do? And so what does a repository do? Well, for me, I would go back to CRUD, create, recall, retrieve, I should say, update, and delete. So I would start with create. It needs to be able to create an object.
All right, so let's create a test method. I'm going to use a snippet here, T-E-S-T-M. And we want to be able to test something and get an ID back, right? So we'll add them, and then the repository will add them and return an ID.
So we're using contact and person interchangeably.
Right. Okay, so we're going to test out our repository, so let's new one up. Fake dinner repository equals new. Now, that doesn't exist yet. We can hit control dot, and we'll generate a class for that.
Great.
All right, I dropped it in there.
And that's a new feature in Visual Studio.
That's right, Visual Studio 2010. All right, so now we can say, and that's a nice thing because it lets us write our code and not get in the way of, because we're writing tests before writing the methods, of course they don't exist, right?
Right, and so it created a new class up here where it's going to place all those methods. And
there's nothing there yet, so let's start writing our methods. We want to create an add method.
Yes.
We're going to pass in a person, and it's going to return an ID.
Right.
Up here using my models.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll allow me to use that person, and we'll just set the name for now.
Now, on this test, since you're saying you're going to get an ID, what we want to do with the should is...
Well, first of all, we need to generate that method, right?
Yes, the add, yes.
So I can hit control dot, and it'll generate a method stub for that.
Yep.
So now what we'll have this test do is we've got an ID back, and let's actually test the existence of this person. So we may want to rename this test.
Sure, or not. But the bottom line here is that we're actually going to try to test, not only did you get an ID back, but does that ID then correspond to
that
the
it's a valid
of
ID,
person?
Right.
Right. Okay. Well, that makes sense.
All right, and we'll hit control dot, and we'll generate an exist method as well. So we may want to write some more fine-grained exist tests later, too. And then we'll say result should equal true. All right, so let's run this now.
So this failed just as we expected it to and wanted it to,
right?
Because we have not implemented the add yet.
So we haven't implemented add or exist. So I'm going to go to definition. I can click on add and hit F12. All right, so we want this to be as simple as possible. We're going to use an in-memory So we'll do a dictionary. All right. So to add that person, we'll just say contacts.add. And we need to give it an ID. We'll just do them sequentially.
Yes. And add one because it'll start at a zero. Right.
Right. Okay. And we're adding in a person. And now we need to return that ID. So return ID.
Yep.
Enough? All right. So we're just doing enough to make that pass. Now our exist method also needs to just check and see if there is a person there. So we can say...
can you say return context.exist ID of ID?
All right. So we're leveraging the dictionary. All right. Now we can rerun our tests, and they passed.
Excellent.
So we're able to very quickly write some code and update them. You know, we can run our tests very quickly without running our web app and testing things out and all that.
Right.
All right. So now we were able to add a contact.
And we checked that it exists, so why don't we retrieve a contact?
Okay. So now we're at a point where, look, we're going to need a new repository again.
Right. So now we went into the debate about, do you want to use a setup and teardown, or do you want to have everything self-contained in each test?
Right. And I think for this case, let's go ahead and have a setup and teardown.
That's fine. That's fine.
Okay. So we can do that by saying test initialize.
For folks who are interested in the debate, there's a pretty good write-up about this, I believe by Jim Newkirk, one of the authors of both NUnit and XUnit, about why they took setup and teardown out of XUnit, the sequel to NUnit. And the basic logic is that in order to fully understand your test, you have to look in three places. You have to look in the setup, and then your test, and then the teardown. The advantage of doing it the way we're doing it is that we don't write the same setup and teardown code repeatedly.
Right. What this is doing is when we run all our tests, instead of using one global or, you know, one module level repository where our tests may conflict with each other, every single test needs to be atomic, so we need to create a new repository each time around. And we'll just set it to null. Right. All right. We've gotten back the ID, but we haven't retrieved the person. Right. And it should equal George Washington. When we run this, we expect it to fail. So we're writing a failing unit test, and then we're going to verify, yes, it failed. Now let's go in and, F12 to go to there. So now let's just return that person. So return contacts ID.
Bingo.
All right.
And now let's see if the test passes. Perfect.
Enough. Okay, so we're just cranking through these. So what are some other things? We've got... create, we've got retrieve, we want to update.
Sure. So we can do a retrieve and then make a change and update it and then make sure that we've got the new value, not the old.
Okay. And to avoid writing the same code over and over again, I'm going to refactor this into a method that adds a person. So create person.
And gets them by ID.
Yeah. So I'll just call this create person. It's going to return that person back. So now, I guess I could have called that create George Washington, huh?
It's fine. You can always add a parameter later.
Okay. All right. So now let's do another test method. Okay. All right. And now we could...
Well, you need to update it because that's the thing we're testing.
Right. So let's say repository. Update, control F12. Awesome. Okay. So, and obviously we can continue to expand out our tests.
One of the statements that Uncle Bob Martin makes in his book, Clean Code, is that if you're doing test-driven development, because the cycle is so short, write a very small test, write just enough code for the test to pass. If you hit a bug, you almost never need to go into the debugger because it was working right up until this very small change you made. And so you can almost always immediately identify what you changed that caused the problem.
So let's say create person, and we'll create a, let's create George Washington and get his ID, right? So now we've got person ID, George Washington. We don't need to change his name. We can delete him. So repository.delete, pass in the ID, hit control dot to stub it. All right, and now we want to verify that that he does not exist. That's the simplest test, right? So, and maybe we'll want to write one more test after this to verify that we don't delete the wrong person. That, you know, we can remove one person without affecting the other people. So we'll do that as a separate test afterwards. All right, so that failed because it doesn't exist yet. So now we'll go in here and we'll delete it. Easy enough. All right. Excellent. Okay, so we've passed all our tests there.
On the one hand, superficially, what we've done is we've written five tests and they all pass. Mm-hmm. But along the way, we've created this repository. We know that this repository is capable of all of the CRUD operations and doing so reasonably safely. So these tests are not just, they're not just serving the purpose of testing. They actually drove the design of the repository. And if you go over to repository.cs, right, exactly, we've got code here, meaningful code that we're going to use moving forward in the design. And in this particular case, we almost certainly could have written the fake dinner repository. If we had sat down and said, okay, we want a repository, let's use a hash table, we probably would have come up with very much the same methods in the same way.
Yeah.
But you can certainly imagine in a more complex design that what you anticipated at the beginning may have been changed by doing these tests, and as you went, any complexity that you added that caused a bug would be caught immediately because each of our coding cycles was extremely short.
Yeah, exactly. So we can go in and we can change things. We probably will, and we can work very quickly at this level. I'm going to quickly change all these internals to public because I do want my repository, I want to be able to access those externally. So I must have dinner on my mind here. I called this a fake dinner repository. I'll rename that to fake person repository. I'll rename that as well. Right. Okay, so now I can extract an interface to that. And I've got a person repository. I've got all these. And so now I can program against that interface for my actual, and I'll call this I person repository, right? Rename that too.
And if we go back to the fake person repository, we should see that that implements iPerson repository.
Right, it should implement person repository. Right, so now when I write out my actual working person repository, I can program against that interface. I can swap those out using dependency injection, and I can test using my fake repository when I want to.
Excellent.
That's probably a good stopping point, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's great. I think that we've seen building this repository and its interface through test-driven development, and we see the potential for injecting in the real repository as it becomes available and using this repository for testing purposes.
Great. Okay. So for Microsoft, this is John Galloway.
And this is Jesse Liberty.
We'll catch you on the next one.